You're listening to DraftKings Network.
This is your typical radio ad while eating a Crunch Bar.
This is Automatic of Otto's Used Cars. This weekend only, we're having a whale. Bring the kids. See for yourself. It is huge. Gonna make a big splash. No other dealer can say they have a whale like this.
When things sound dull, turn up the fun with Crunch.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from space exploration and green energy to delivering pizzas and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 2, 200, or 2 million, Atlassian software is built to keep you connected and moving together as one.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
Very exciting to have some legitimate and real expertise around here because college football chaos has descended. If you have been listening to John Skipper, who birthed all of this in a way that was commercially very successful, capitalism won. He got, I think, these conferences cheap once upon a time, but now realignment is upon us, and he predicted most of what it is that you're seeing here. He's the CEO of Meadowlark, and he's been involved in all of these rooms where these billion-dollar deals get made. So thank you, John, for making the time. I know you are very busy. What have you made of the last few days and just UCLA and USC saying bleep history, tradition, all these fraud things that we used to talk about? Let's go get that money.
Well, I think clearly, as is always the case, it's about money. And USC and UCLA, with the upcoming negotiation for Pac-12 rights and the upcoming negotiation for Big Ten rights, I think saw that they would get more money by moving to the Big Ten. So they'd move to the Big Ten.
What did you pay for Longhorn Network and those things, and how updated are those prices now? What kind of deal? You've told us before what a great business deal college basketball and college football has been for television. What kind of price did you get, and did you see all of this coming?
Well, college basketball and college football were great deals because until ESPN launched all those multiple networks, and particularly ESPN3, which was the first digital network where you could do multiple games in the same time slot, there was no place to put all these games. And so, the broadcast networks carried a couple of games a week. There's enormous inventory, and all of the schools wanted exposure, so they were, relative to the professional leagues, they were quite economical. At this point, with everything going to streaming and with Fox, NBC, and CBS all launching pay TV channels, however late they were, they all needed inventory. And so as that began to happen, prices went up. And now we're in kind of an arms race where everybody wants to move to a conference in order to get more money. We're coming to an era of diminishing returns in terms of their just being able to move somewhere and get a bunch more money. But I think it's clear that the Big Ten and the SEC have emerged as clearly the dominant players here, particularly in terms of ratings and sort of achievement on the football field. They both now have 16 teams. There's a dramatic difference, though. The SEC's rights are tied up through, I believe, 34, And the Big Ten is going to probably have at least two new rounds of rights negotiations before 34. So they're in a very good position to get more money. And with the streamers beginning to come in, they look to have a chance to take advantage of that as well. So that's exactly why USC and UCLA moved. And I think it was a smart move by Kevin Warren, because he does go out and grab the two teams in the Los Angeles market. He adds California to the footprint. Footprints have long ago become pretty irrelevant when you have, you know, West Virginia in the Big 12 and Syracuse in the ACC. This just makes that more acute, that footprints don't really matter anymore. It also speaks to the power of football. And I do have some, and did when I was doing some of this. It's, you know, it becomes harder for the other sports, right? Football reigns supreme here. But, you know, when Maryland moved to the Big Ten, suddenly, you know, their lacrosse teams had to figure out how to make a schedule, and their field hockey teams and their soccer teams. So you're going to have even more of that. I don't know. I think it to be the case that UCLA is among the schools in the country that has the most different sports. And one of the things to figure out is how are the volleyball teams going to get back and forth to the Midwest so many times. But it's going to happen. I do think people sometimes underestimate the value of basketball. This is mostly about football. But I do think, as we talk through this a little bit more, basketball will come into play a bit.
Can you take us through the details of the deals that you made, John? Not just what they were worth, but where you assigned the value and seeing what the future would look like as you were paying what seemed at the time to be giant sums of money.
Well, they were pretty significant sums of money, and most of them have been public. But shortly after I got the job of content officer at ESPN, we did the first $1 billion television deal with the Big Ten. Of course, that was $100 million for 10 years, which seems like quite a good deal at this point. The moves that have been made have been mostly about that. I always said that I had to, I always told every college commissioner, I will work with you to advise you on what I think will help you the most, but I am going to advise every college commissioner the same way, and some of those things are going to be at odds with each other. We did that. I would say one of the more important ones was with the ACC, which, by the way, I must disclose that I'm a homer there as a University of North Carolina graduate. But everyone will remember that one of the big moves made was when the ACC was in danger of losing its basketball prominence to the Big East, and also was not seeing the same kind of increases that that the Big Ten and the SEC were, went and took Pittsburgh, Louisville, moved Pittsburgh, Louisville, Boston College, and Syracuse into the ACC. And it's a place where it gives me a chance to talk about something that I've seen very little in all the discussion that goes on about this, with who's going to go where. And most of those discussions seem to involve, well, how do schools fit? Is this the right kind of school? One of the most important factors, not quite as important now, is what state are they in? For the ACC, the Big Ten, and the SEC, all of whom have their own very well-distributed networks. I realize cable television is declining, but Pittsburgh, Louisville, Boston College, and Syracuse both created a diminution in the quality of the basketball in the Big East, but it also added Pennsylvania, New York, Kentucky, and Massachusetts to the footprint of the ACC, Pennsylvania, New York, and Massachusetts represent quite a lot of population, and those network deals are paid based on footprint and non-footprint. So there's one price for the states in which subscribers live within the footprint and a price in which they don't live within the footprint. I suspect that to be the case. I don't know it with the Big Ten, that their network, and of course that network is with Fox, but they just added, I believe, the most populous state in the United States to their footprint. So there is that factor, which I think has gone under-recognized in this move. Not only are there great schools, great football traditions, but big populations. And now they're in the Big Ten network. And while pay TV is declining, there still are a 60, 70 million subscribers. And I don't know what a number of those, but one out of every seven or so of those lives in the state of California. I'm not sure that math is right, by the way. Someone can check my math, but you understand the point of that. And when there are discussions about, oh, such and such a school will move Georgia, I'll make it up, North Carolina, Georgia Tech will move, or Clemson. Clemson will move into the SEC. Doesn't do the SEC any good. They've already got a South Carolina school. Not a very popular state either. It may sort of fit the sort of zeitgeist of the SEC, but it doesn't add any money. And if all you do is add schools, you're dividing up the same money, if you have an existing contract, among more schools. So all you're doing there is diminishing the amount of money that the existing schools get. That is also why you see the Big Ten making this move at a moment when they can do a new television contract. So slightly more complicated for the ACC, which has not only a contract for 36, but the schools, and I believe this was insisted upon, the schools gave a grant of rights through 36. So, and I've seen some suggestions that those grants of rights may be adjudicatable. I'm not sure if that's a word or not. I don't know if they are or not, but I certainly believe that ESPN thinks that they are binding.
So, John, if you're the commissioner of the ACC, how nervous are you looking ahead? Are you thinking Pac-12 alliance? Are you thinking I'm in jeopardy despite this contract of losing some of my marquee teams? I mean, it seems to me that the ACC is the next to fall in terms of teams defecting.
$5.
I know, that was bad.
Well, again, defecting, if they defect, their rights remain with the ACC. So I actually think, and this is slightly contrary to most of what I've read, I actually think the ACC is in the best position behind the Big Ten and the SEC. They still have what is a mostly coherent collection of schools that are sort of, you know, academic and care about a large number of sports. It, with the exception of Boston College and Syracuse, is a pretty contiguous footprint, and they are the best basketball conference. I know everybody will argue with me about it, but they are, and they're basketball. So if I was the commissioner of the ACC, which I'm not, and I'm not advising anybody now, I would be thinking about who the 15th and 16th team should be. Obviously, they would most like to have Notre Dame. That's what I wanted when I was at ESPN, and we managed to get everything except football. They're one of the big dominoes to fall here, but I would be concentrating to see if I couldn't get Notre Dame, and then I would be trying to see if I couldn't find another school from a state that was not in my current footprints. I don't know. This is a little crazy, but Rice, ACC is not in Texas. And Texas is a big state with a lot of population. It fits kind of. Rice and Duke and Wake Forest and Virginia and North Carolina all sort of act like Boston College. So they've got some options. I don't see I could be wrong, but I think it's hard for the schools to move. I'm not sure any of the schools want to move. I've read a lot of speculation about North Carolina going to the Big Ten. I can see why they would be attractive, but I don't think they'd want to go. If they really want to lose North Carolina, Duke, I don't think so. There are a couple of other ways. What I'd also be thinking about is, how am I going to get more money? Because their problem, they're doing quite well, but their problem is they're going to fall further and further behind and have no way to renegotiate the deal, I don't believe. They can do it by adding other schools and the state of Texas, but they are the best basketball conference. I would be calling around to see if there's going to be four super conferences, which I think there will be, of 16 or so teams. How about we create four super conferences and do our own basketball tournament? Look, there's no bounds to the avarice of these schools and their intent to compete. And somebody someday is going to look at that. I don't know. You're getting somewhere north of somewhere between $800 million and $1 billion that get paid out every year to the participants in the NCAA tournament conference. If I was the ACC, I'd be thinking hard about how I could keep more of that money by creating a big conference-only basketball tournament that kept all that money. I'd also think that if you created four 16-team conferences, you would have 32 bowls, and every team in one of those conferences would go to a bowl. And you might even use those bowls to play the first round of a very expansive college football playoff system. So there are plenty of ways to get more money in addition to trying to figure out what can be done with Amazon and Apple.
John, we've got rapid-fire questions here in the 5 minutes that you have remaining. I am going to pin you down to no elaborations. And if you want to elaborate on the back end, we got a ton of questions. So, Jessica, start us off, and I'm going to force John Skipper to give us very quick answers.
Yes or no, John, is this a proxy war between Fox and ESPN?
No, I don't think so.
What, if anything, has surprised you about the movement recently?
I was surprised that it started again, though it makes all the sense now that USC and UCLA move. I just was surprised that it started again.
What are people not reporting, or what are they missing here that they should be talking about because we don't have the expertise that you do?
They should be thinking more about the states, because that is the footprint. I'll give you a crazy thing. If the SEC...
No elaborations. SEC. Hold the crazy thing for a second.
No, that seemed good.
Dems the brakes.
I want the crazy thing. I will circle back around and ask you about the crazy thing.
I want to hear the crazy thing.
All right, give us the crazy thing.
If Vanderbilt... If the SEC traded Vanderbilt to the ACC for NC State, it would each add a state. And those are more, in some ways, more logical homes for those schools.
Wow, a trade of schools. I love that. Yeah, John, if the University of Miami wanted to leave the ACC for the SEC, could they, and what would it cost them?
I can't tell you that I understand that exactly. I don't think it's particularly feasible, and it wouldn't help the SEC very much.
I forgot my question because Chris started talking when I was about to start talking.
Is the U back?
Is the U back?
Don't listen to him. He doesn't care about anything that's happening here. He just likes to shit on everything you've built. Notre Dame is going to end up doing what?
They desperately want to keep their independence in football, but they're probably going to have to choose between the ACC and the Big Ten. And most schools will choose money, so I would guess they'll end up in the Big Ten.
So
I think it would be a mistake.
John, you basically put forward a vision for LIV Golf, but for college football, which is they take over their own stuff and create their own thing.
Backed by the Saudi government?
Well, no, not by the Saudi government, but essentially a breakaway league that secures them no matter what, everyone gets into a bowl, no matter what, there's a giant playoff, and we don't have to give any of our money to smaller schools. Is that essentially what you're thinking of?
I think so. Is that what the Premier League... fine England was, how that was formed. That's the reason that they were, European clubs were trying to form a Super League. The people at the top always want to gather more of the money for themselves.
Here's the, perhaps the most naive question. Is there any academics to play a role in any of this?
I do believe, particularly in the Big Ten and the ACC, they still do. Remember when I'm elaborating, Dan. Am I allowed to elaborate?
I'm sorry to have been so dictatorial about what it is that we are doing here.
Remember that when the Pac-12 and Larry Scott tried to move Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, Texas, and Texas A&M, a couple of things derailed it, but one was their reluctance to move Oklahoma and Oklahoma State into what they regarded as a more academic conference. There was a similar concern at ACC relative to Louisville. I'm not suggesting, by the way, there's anything untoward about those moves or those schools, just that the ACC and the Big Ten do still have more, I think, concern than the other conferences about academics.
What are people going to see from college football in 10 years that they're not seeing right now?
Well, I think you're going to see a much expanded college football playoff. I think they're going to see exactly what Chris articulated, which is they're going to be the four conferences of 16 are going to be pretty much self-contained within the universe. And there's going to be a number of schools left out. It's going to be very difficult because I don't think they're about to put relegation in.
That was my question. You don't think there's going to be relegation? You don't think Vanderbilt's going to get relegated?
Oh, well, that would be great. Yeah. That'd be great.
Relegate Rutgers?
That's a good question. It's a great question, Jessica.
Thank you.
I don't think there'll be relegation in the sense that schools are actually going to, on an annual basis, go up and down. One thing that has not happened, and maybe this, Dan, is something that has surprised me, is at some point somebody's going to say, gee, School A has no business in the top 64 schools because there is another school not in this group of schools right now that belongs there. Use Notre Dame. Notre Dame, that's why I think Notre Dame will have to choose, because at some point there are going to be no independents. There are going to be 64 schools that are going to form a breakaway association, and that will happen. It will force everybody to choose.
Last question, no elaboration. Did you rip off the ACC and force them to have the worst contract television contract of all of these contracts?
No.
Now I want the elaboration.
I want the answer that's honest.
Dan, I just, as your partner, I was just following the rules laid out before me in a sort of a co-equal environment, and the answer is no. We did, at the time, a very, very good deal. They wanted an ACC network. That network has worked very well for them. They still have good options, though they're slightly more complicated.
But after you signed the deal, did you leave the room laughing?
No, but I left the room happy every time I signed a longer and longer deal, because all deals look great. I mean, it's interesting that Jim Delaney, who was the commissioner of the Big Ten, and did the first long deal, which was 10 years, and I think that he regretted doing a 10-year deal, and he is the one of the commissioners who remained steadfast that he would do shorter deals from that point on.
You mentioned, and
I said he had his network.
I lied saying it was the last question. You mentioned a mistake that you thought was made in the entire looking at everything that is happening with change and structure. What do you view as the greatest mistake Party X has made? Whatever it is, whether it's a conference, a school, whatever decision has been made where you're like, I believe that's a mistake, the largest of the mistakes made here.
Well, I'll give you two. I think that the biggest mistake, and it's not quite a mistake, has just been the ineffectiveness of the NCAA, right? I mean, all these things are happening, and there's sort of a hapless bystander in that. While I think they would disagree with me, I think Maryland moving to the Big Ten was a mistake. It's an ACC school. They left Duke behind. They have been woeful pretty much in football and can't keep up. You could argue the other mistake on somebody will kill me for this, but the other mistake was, but I understand why they did it, was Big Ten putting Rutgers in. But they did it to get the supposedly the television footprint of the tri-state area. But I don't know the last time I passed a bar and saw the Rutgers game on television.
But you say Rutgers, and I think of Rice as the same, right? You mentioned the idea of can I get into Texas with Rice, and I think of Rice as the same as Rutgers. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong, but Rice is in the state of Texas, which I think is either the second or third most populous state. Jersey's a big state, and they got that in, so it's a, you know, it's a matter of degree, I guess.
John, appreciate the expertise. I do not believe that anywhere you will find better expertise on this subject matter than you just heard there. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Dan. Thanks, Jeff. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Greg.
And the anarchist. Bye. Don't forget to thank the anarchist back there, asking you if the U
Stumped
is back.
Him. And Roy.
Okay, Roy. The U is everywhere.
Thank you, John.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee, and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, sneakers and streetwear so fresh, every step feels fly. eBay gets it, so look for the blue checkmark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.
Don Lebatard.
A recreation of the iconic scene in A Few Good Men, as told by Chris Cody.
Stugatz.
Colonel Jessup. Did you order the code red?
You don't have to answer that question.
I'll answer the question. You want answers?
I think I'm entitled to them.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
You can't handle the truth.
This is the Dan Lebatard Show with the Stugatz.
Represented by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code Dan for a special offer when you sign up. That's code Dan, only at DraftKings Sportsbook.
Action!
I don't think Cody knows what you're laughing at there,
what
Whittingham.
Happened? What did you drop? You just dropped something.
I dropped my pen, as he said, action, and Cody, right into the action, was swinging his arm over his head, lasso style, like a cowboy that was going to lasso the rest of the show. And it is time for Greg Cody
Greg Lasso
to star right now. I want to get Greg Cody's opinion on a whole bunch of different things. This means I'm going to ignore right now that Brett Favre is out here saying, hey, I'll take any broadcasting job you guys got if anybody needs somebody.
They seem to be paying a lot of money. I'll take one.
If anyone needs somebody who has texted a woman his gray penis and stolen government money from the poor, Brett Favre is available. He's saying
that being second on the resume is unbelievable.
We will not get to that. We will not get to Baker Mayfield. We have to get to all Greg Cody thing. We will not get to Bradley Beal having the only no trade contract in the entire sport of basketball.
Will we get to Aaron Rodgers' tattoo finally?
Maybe. If we burn through all of Greg Cody's things, because people have not gotten enough Greg Cody today. If you want more Greg Cody, his podcast is out now. The Greg Cody Show featuring Greg Cody.
With Greg Cody.
It is this week about his annual Fourth on the Beach tradition, where I believe Greg Cody for years now drinks so much beer on the Fourth that he physically sleeps in the sand on the beach, passed out. I believe that is the tradition. Is it not, Greg Cody?
You know, back in the day, that did happen once or twice. But,
didn't get into that many Miller Lights this time?
No, we revived the tradition after 15 years. A cavalcade of celebrities showed up. Izzy Gutierrez was there. I mean, it was a real bash.
Who else was in the cavalcade? Generally, cavalcade connotes a lot.
I believe that's the only celebrity who was there.
Greg was there.
Yeah,
that
was the only celebrity Chris was there. Yeah. You know, but it was great. We also have Olympic Cornhole in the latest episode of the Greg Cody Show podcast. Our best competition yet in the father-son Olympics. Our closest, most exciting competition. My youngest son bought me a cornhole set for Father's Day. Christopher gave me a card. But so we played Olympic cornhole, and what a finish. Wow, what a finish. Anyway, enough about my podcast, The Greg Cody Show, with Greg Cody, out now, wherever you listen.
Opinions that will not be found there, but will be found here, that I've been dying to get to.
I
because
you
you've been talking about them off air, but we have not gotten to them on air. The documentary about Julia Child.
Yeah.
On.
Wow, that's great. Thank you for bringing that up.
On HBO Max, Julia Child, a renowned, famous, pioneering chef. What is it? I have not seen the documentary. It's been in the queue. You got to be in the right mood for some of these things. I haven't been able to get to this or the unbearable weight of Nicolas Cage's talent.
What kind of mood do you need to be in to watch Julia Child? I feel like you just need to be in a happy mood.
A two-hour mood is the mood I need to be in.
You know what? You can be hungry. You can be happy. You can be whatever you want to watch Julia Child. She was one of my early heroes. I saw her shows when they were in black and white. She was the first celebrity chef on TV, as far as I know. Maybe the Galloping Gourmet was in the same era. But he was a trip, that guy. But Julia Child is genuinely a hero of mine. The French chef. And watching the documentary, you learn things about her as a person. I had no idea she was a chain smoker, big cigarette smoker. Huge woman, about 6'4". And what a chef, though. no, she was. I mean, I used too much butter.
I'm sorry, you watched a two-hour documentary about Julia Child and came back with, she was a chain smoker at 6'4".
Yeah, huge no, woman. Huge woman.
Huge
No, she was.
Greg, what?
And she used too much butter. The French do. And to this day, I incorporate that. That's why I'm unhealthy. I use too much butter in the kitchen and elsewhere. No, I'm serious. But I love Julia Child. What can I tell you? I recommend it highly, the docuseries.
Apparently nothing. You can tell us nothing.
It's on HBO Max. I don't want to, spoiler alert, I don't want to give anything away. You know?
You were so delighted to talk about it, and what we've got is chain-smoking huge woman. Okay, well, very good.
She's 6'2", and from Pasadena.
Fine butter.
She's 6'2"?
Yes,
what did 6'2". I say, 6'4"?
Yes.
All right, I'm giving her too much credit.
You also made her French, and he just said she's from Pasadena.
Well, but she was a French-style chef.
She taught Americans how to cook in the French
exactly.
cooking
right,
style.
Right. Yes. That's right. And it's also interesting because she started off very local, and then she was getting other shows to carry her. All of a sudden, the Chicago station is picking her up. That was one of her big breaks. And she became a local person who became a national chef. And she went on tour. Women adored her. It's just an interesting docuseries on HBO Max. Highly recommend it.
In Greg's defense, she had a show called The French Chef.
Right.
No, Greg was right about that.
Yeah. Did I say she was French?
No, you called her the French chef.
Okay.
But no, you were fine.
Okay.
But
thank you.
You might have confused people who didn't know that she was not French.
Thank you.
I must misspeak a lot because every time Billy opens his mouth, he says, in Greg's defense.
Yeah. Well, I feel like I need to, you
Thank
know?
You. Somebody's got to defend me.
She served in the armed services, huh?
With Kenny Lofton's dad?
That's right. She also was a postmaster.
You know what's so weird? Ina Garten also was a NASA, like, engineer or something like that. And then she pivoted and became the Barefoot Contessa.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
What,
I never
what
knew
that. Connection is there between... No, she wasn't actually barefoot. But what, like, what is the connection with having these, like, high-ranking government jobs and then, like, eh, you know what? I'm just going to go cook.
I never drew that line in the sand. I don't know.
Another thing that Cody has been wanting to talk about, and I believe I haven't left enough space for this because I believe that in these summer months, which I really enjoy doing the show, the summer months that don't have anything in sports to talk about so that we can ruminate on some of the dumber stuff. Miss Pac-Man is being inducted into the World Video Game Hall of Fame. And I don't know what else that you would put in there. I'm surprised that Miss Pac-Man wasn't already in there. But Greg Cody thinks he should be a part of that induction ceremony.
Yeah, I would induct her. I really would. She's meant so much in my life. I have her in my game room. I have an arcade game there, and it's fantastic. It's the quintessential arcade game, Ms. Pac-Man. I love everything about it, except that it doesn't have a pause button. Because what happens is I'm in the middle of a game. I'm having a great score. The phone rings. Could be somebody important. I can't pause the game. You know, so that's an imperfection. If I were inducting her, I probably wouldn't bring that up because it's not her fault. You know, she didn't manufacture the game or invent it. But I can't believe it took so long for Ms. Pac-Man to be inducted. It was a game I played. It was huge when I was in college, junior college and college. It was just starting out, I think. And
it was invented in the early 80s. Okay. All of the Pac-Man stuff was invented, and it was the groundbreaking video game after video game stuff after all the crud that was Pong and Space Invaders and all the crap that wasn't very good.
Nothing better.
I would dare say Pac-Man is the video game GOAT. What do you mean, no? I really do think that there is no video game that more people have played. There is not a video game that more people have competed or enjoyed. There's not too many other video games where there's a documentary about trying to achieve a high score in this game. I don't think that there has been a video game that has had more cultural significance than Pac-Man.
The Video Game Hall of Fame was originated in 2015. The original class included Pac-Man. Also includes
so this
Mario
is Ms.
Brothers.
Pac-Man? So this is
Ms. Pac-Man.
So this is a misogynist Hall of Fame then?
Yeah, it is. Ms. should have been an inaugural inductee. It was an outrage.
It's probably because of the pause thing.
Put it on the poll, Guillermo, at Lebatard Show. Is Pac-Man the universal first ballot number one Hall of Fame inductee?
GoldenEye, N64. Wow. What a game.
Jessica, you're also, this has been a recurring theme today where you don't speak into the mic, but you roll your eyes
at
everything
being
said.
I know, my eye just twitches. I think, Woody, we did, everyone in this room did a top five video game last year.
Yeah.
List.
Yeah.
Pac-Man was on not a single list.
Yeah, I can see it. Ms. Pac-Man kicks ass.
GoldenEye, by the way, class is 2020.
See? Told you.
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember having played GoldenEye that much. Might have been a little bit before my time, but
You've never heard of it?
Well, never heard of it is offensive. Like the theme music is iconic.
You've
it's
never heard. How did I hear you? I hear everything.
She muttered it under her breath. This has been Jessica's been doing a show by herself with her twitching eye today.
We're trying to figure out also back here because like there's the never heard of it GoldenEye, but also I have a Janis Joplin impression who was born in 1948.
She's a ledge, bro.
She is.
Yeah. What?
Sometimes Jess is ageist, and sometimes she loves things from the 60s. Damn, it's very strange.
Big brother in the holding company, am I right?
Mm-hmm.
Jessica, what do you have to say about Aaron Rodgers' new tattoo? We're going to ask Ricky Williams about this tomorrow, I would imagine.
It just seems like it's very controversial. I've seen people who do not like Aaron Rodgers say what a great tattoo it is and how well done it is. But it's just one of those tattoos where it feels like you mash together like 16 different motifs. And I'm like, what does any of this mean? We'll never know. I don't know. I tweeted about it last night. I was very mean about it. But, like, you know, Aaron Rodgers, controversial. I'm half a Bears fan. He lied about being vaccinated, et cetera, et cetera. It looks like a tattoo that, like, I would have saved to a Pinterest board when I was 16.
I saw the best tweet about this was, it was like a fake quote. It was Aaron Rodgers. So I heard Kyrie Irving talking about, and tattoo artist : say no more. And it's basically if Kyrie Irving were a tattoo is what this tattoo is.
From like forgetting.
Some lions, there's some space like stuff. Yeah, some like symbols.
Too much going on.
I don't know what it means.
There's a third eye Illuminati thing.
Wow. It's very intricate.
What is the name of the character that Russell Brand played in Forgetting Sarah Marshall, the rock star that didn't know what to believe in, so he had a bunch of contradictory tattoos?
It's Aldous Snow.
Is that that's what you guys are getting at? That Aaron Rodgers, a deep thinker, has put together an assortment of things on his body that are meant to give off, I think differently than others, and here is a chart that proves it.
What are we doing here, guys? He got a tattoo in his 30s. Like, what do you think it was going to be? A tribal tattoo? Something on his lower back? Like, he got something that he liked.
That would be awesome. I mean, I don't give a shit that he got a tattoo, but like he posted a picture of it, so like, yeah, I'm gonna poke a little fun.
It's deep thinker, or it's not deep thinker who thinks he's deep thinker.
Yes,
showing you how deep thinking he is while not being a deep thinker.
Yes, ooh, look how deep thinking I am. What does my tattoo mean? Wow, people have to ask me about what does it mean.
I love tattoo people online being like the expert on tattoos. Being like, this tattoo is like, I saw Gojo. I love Gojo, but he was like, this is like a classic first tattoo because he put a lot of thought into it and wants to tell people what it means. And I'm just like, Gojo, that's a tattoo guy who's like, this is my area of expertise. I'm going to explain what this tattoo means.
Tattoos. Get over yourself. Except for tribal tattoos, like, get over yourself. Like,
what?
Who cares about your tattoo?
You're pro tribal tattoo?
I am like The Rock, you know, and Samoans.
Like actual.
Yeah, have actual meaning.
Not guys named like Craig Johnson getting a tribal tattoo.
Oh, I thought you meant the guy like Southwest 8th Street that has like the one barbed wire around.
No. Trash. Get out of here.
Do you guys stare at people with tattoos and then feel self-conscious that you're staring at them? Because I like to decipher what a tattoo is. But it also can take a long time sometimes. So I'm just staring at a tattoo and I realize I've been looking at this person for 15 seconds and they probably want to punch me in the face.
Yeah. I mean, think about this, though. You're sitting down for hours on end getting painful injections of ink into your skin that's going to end up fading. So you have to retouch it. So you have to endure more hours of retouching, painful retouching of this tattoo. No, get out of here. No, waste of time.
Wow.
It's also a form of artistic expression.
This is also the least tatted group of people that work at this company, sometimes, by the way, talking about tattoos right now.
You know, honors, loved ones, things like that.
There you go. That's the only exception.
Oh, he's got an idea.
I have an idea.
I like
Light bulb tattoo.
There you go. Jess gets it. We talked the other day about how to honor Hank, and we said name the studio after him. Let's place a bet in his honor. Hank Goldberg tattoo.
Put a hammer.
How much would I have to pay you, Billy, to get for you to do it?
To get a hammer?
No, to get Hank Goldberg tattooed on you.
How big and
like his face? Like his entire back is Hank Goldberg's face.
No, my entire back, no.
It doesn't have to be a big tattoo. It just has to be, what is the negotiating? What is the going rate?
$10 million.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Texting privacy policy and terms and conditions posted at textplan.us. Texting enrolls for recurring automated text marketing messages. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Individual results may vary. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You've lost so much weight. How'd you do it?
I got medical treatment for weight loss through Zelty and lost 50 pounds. I struggled for the longest time, but Zelty makes it easy and affordable to get weight loss treatment 100% online. Zelty providers can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications clinically shown to help people lose weight, like Wegovy, Zepbound, and others.
I've heard those medications can help you lose weight, but aren't they expensive?
Zelty can help get the medication covered by insurance, so it's as little as $0 a month.
What if you don't have insurance?
No problem. Zelty may be able to help you get other GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% off the price of name brand medications.
I'm ready to start losing weight. How do I get started with Zelty?
Just text.
Text THIN to 200-300 to get started today with Zelty and see if weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound are right for you. Don't wait. Text now for a link to your exclusive offer. Text THIN to 200-300. That's THIN to 200-300. THIN to 200-300.